Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up and don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another exciting adventure here on Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Southern Sense, and I'm the hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with the coolest of co-hosts, Cool Mike. And we're trying to bring Cool Mike on, and Cool Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Annie. Very excited about today's show. I'm very, very excited again to do another show with you. And with that being said, I know we're anxious to get this next guest on. I probably woke up at some time about 5:30 in the morning, and I had a dream that I was missing the show, and I was tripping out. I'm so excited about the show today with our guest.
Well, let's bring him along. For those that are listening, I want to welcome you and welcome everyone into the chat room. I see a bunch of our friends in there. Our special guest today is Dinesh D'Souza. He wrote the book 2016 Obama's America, and this book is what the film 2016 is based upon, and he also stars in the film. He is president of King's College in New York City. Good afternoon, Mr. D'Souza.
Hey, it's good to be on the show.
Hey, just before coming on to the show today, I did something very, very painful. I made the mistake of clipping on the Bill Maher show that you were on back at, September 1st or something like that? That was painful. I feel so bad for you.
Well, no. That was a little bit of an ambush. And I think Bill Maher, he's got this format in which he has these worshiping audience. And every time he says something, however foolish, they all erupt into idiotic applause. So it's kind of a weird format. I felt like I was walking in the lion's den a little bit. But nevertheless, it was fun to go on the show. And it's a way to reach some people who I wouldn't normally reach through the normal channels that I write and speak for.
That I can say, because, it reminded me that was a perfect case study in herd mentality.
Well, I see it on campuses all the time. Some student goes up and goes, George W. Bush was an idiot. Thunderous applause. You know, so there's no mind behind any of that. The only mistake to make is to mistake that for intelligence, because it's not. So with Bill Maher, you know, the bottom line of it was, what I didn't realize was the poor guy was smarting from something that happened 10 years ago, which is he got kicked off ABC, his show Politically Incorrect, because of some stupid remarks that he had made. And he was trying on that show to blame me for the remarks. And, of course, I had to point out that, no, I didn't make the remarks, you did.
Yeah, I liked it when you said take responsibility for your own action. I thought that was fantastic. Hey, listen, what made you write this book and make the film?
Well, the film is 2016, Obama's America, and actually the book is Obama's America, almost the same title. The reason I wrote it is I felt I had stumbled upon an idea about Obama that was missing from the public debate. And that is the idea that Obama isn't just a conventional liberal or a conventional redistributor of income or a conventional critic of American foreign policy, but that Obama actually has an ideological commitment to downsizing America, to shrinking the American economy, to actually transferring wealth away from America to other countries, to deliberately weakening America, by which I mean reducing America's influence in the world. Again, not just because he's an evil guy or because he's a secret Muslim or something, but to do it because he believes in global justice. He thinks it's wrong for America to have so much wealth and so much power. So ultimately, he's an anti-colonialist. He's someone who believes that the world is unfair because the West dominates it and because America dominates it. So that's Obama. He's a global redistributor of wealth and power. And the question is, do we want such a guy to be our president over the next 4 years?
Yeah. Now, he doesn't want to just redistribute the wealth. He actually wants us to bring us down in our standard of living.
Right, but he wants to bring us down in our standard of living so that Mexicans and Colombians and Brazilians can come up. And he wants to reduce America's power in the world because he wants other countries like China and Russia and India and Brazil to share power in the world. He doesn't like America being the sole superpower. He doesn't want us to be the world's number one. He'd be perfectly happy if we are the world's number 12 or 64, just one country at the big dining table of nations. So that's Obama. That's his philosophy. And not only does he espouse it, he got it, by the way, a lot of it from his father, who did espouse it, but also it describes what Obama is actually doing. If you look at the Middle East and what Obama is doing now, you can see it. He basically is, in some ways, not supporting or in some cases actively undermining our allies, notably Israel. Look at the way he pushed out our ally Hosni Mubarak in Egypt. Even Gaddafi was not our ally, but he was doing business with America. He's dead. Meanwhile, our enemies are thriving. Assad is still in power in Syria. The mullahs are still in power in Iran. You don't get any sense that Obama is helping the Muslim Brotherhood come to power in Egypt. So why would a president do this? One theory is that he's an incredible bungler. He tries to do X, but he achieves Y. I say no. He's not a bungler. He's not getting results different from what he intends. Rather, he intends the results he's getting.
Wow. That's a powerful insight on that one. One of the things that Bill Maher was accusing you of is that because you did not personally meet him, you could not possibly understand him. But in the book and film, you related your upbringing in India to Obama's. Now, how are they actually related, and how is it that you can understand them better?
Well, first of all, Obama wrote a very revealing, a self-disclosing autobiography, Dreams from My Father. Reading that book carefully is much better than interviewing Obama, because Obama is now a politician. That book came out, by the way, in 1995. Obama was 34 years old. He tells you a lot about himself. Even in that book, he does some camouflages. But now, if I were to sit down with Obama, all I would get were canned responses, responses literally lifted off the campaign trail. Oh, I, Obama, am Israel's best friend. Oh, I, Obama, am so concerned about the deficit. Oh, I, Obama, am a great budget cutter. Now, anyone who's been watching the past 4 years would want to erupt in uncontrollable laughter. But the point is, that's not Obama. Interviewing him is useless at this point. What you need to do is learn about him, read his book, watch our film, 2016, read about all his associates, read about the group that I call Obama's founding fathers. And who are those guys? In Hawaii, a former communist, Frank Marshall Davis. A radical Palestinian that Obama met at Columbia, Edward Said, a Brazilian socialist who has called on China, Brazil, Russia, and India to, quote, gang up on the United States. An incendiary pastor, Jeremiah Wright, and finally a domestic terrorist, Bill Ayers. So these are the guys that Obama has been hanging out with over the past 30 years. These are the guys who helped define his personality. They were his mentors. And by the way, he didn't just bump into them. He chose them, he befriended them, and he stayed close to them over a period not just of years but of decades.
You know, how does Valerie Jarrett fit into all this?
Well, she represents the kind of third world sensibility that the Obamas have always been attracted to. And by the way, his mother, too. Obama's mother had a kind of fatal attraction to third world men. And with Valerie Jarrett, she brings in a way that same kind of, you may call it cosmopolitanism if you want, but it's a perspective that doesn't put the interests of America in the front. It looks at it from the global point of view, and it's quite willing to see America as the global oppressor. One reason I think Obama is so weirdly sympathetic to Muslim jihadis who are captured in places like Iraq and Afghanistan is not because Obama is like a closet Muslim, it's because he sees those guys as anti-colonial freedom fighters who are trying to liberate their own country from American occupation.
Now, would you call him then a Manchurian candidate?
No, because a Manchurian candidate implies that he's a pawn of somebody else. He's not a pawn of Valerie Jarrett or of Hillary Clinton or of David Axelrod. They are his pawns.
Now, I'm not completely agreeing with you on Valerie Jarrett. I do think she is directing him in a lot of things. You note the way that she groomed Michelle Obama. She also groomed Barack himself. And she's been by their side the entire time. And now she's got some post inside the White House, and he goes running to her for every little thing. So I'm not too sure if you can say that she's controlling him or him controlling her.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting inside discussion that we can have. But remember that ultimately it's Obama's call, right? If he goes to her because he chooses her and he trusts her. So Obama does have surrounding him a coterie of trusted people. Now, he also has other people who are less trusted. I don't think Hillary is in his trusted inner circle. And in fact, a lot of Obama's policies have been opposed by people in his administration. The Defense Department, the CIA, the State Department, on various policies, whether it's Israel or the way he's been befriending the Taliban and undercutting Karzai, the way he got out of Iraq. I mean, Obama from time to time has been opposed by various elements in his administration, but he has always defeated that opposition and prevailed. So that's why I don't buy this idea that Obama is an amateur, he's a buffoon, he's a bungler. No, Obama is really effective in achieving what he sets out to do. Now, often we judge him by a standard that he would not apply to himself. We say stuff like, he doesn't realize that, by raising taxes, you're not going to promote economic growth. He realizes that. Maybe promoting economic growth is not his primary goal. He doesn't realize that Assad and the mullahs in Iran are not our friends. I think Obama realizes that. So with Obama, the problem is we often judge him by the wrong standard. We as conservatives will judge him by conservative standards, but he's not trying to achieve conservative goals.
It's funny because you say that you've got the similar background, you being from India and he being raised in Indonesia, yet you grew up and became a conservative and he becomes a progressive liberal. How can you be so far apart and yet so close together?
Well, I'm a third world guy who's embraced America, and he's an American-born guy who's embraced a third world ideology. So we've actually, even though we might have similarities, we've actually traveled in opposite directions. It was interesting in my film, in 2016, I interviewed George Obama, and George is the president's half-brother. And when you talk, when you listen to George, you realize that George Obama, amazingly enough, is a little bit of a conservative. He's on the opposite end of the spectrum as Obama. Now, again, I say to myself, why? And I think part of the reason is George actually grew up in third world poverty. George actually knows what poverty in the rest of the world looks like. And so George can see that countries that are practicing free market capitalism are coming up in the world, and countries that are practicing redistributionist collectivism are sinking further into the morass. So, in some ways, I feel more of an affinity with George Obama than I do with Barack Obama, who I think is ultimately a Hawaiian-born guy who has sort of never lived in the third world, but has sort of, pilfered or lifted this antiquated third world philosophy from his dead father and is now trying to put it into effect in the White House. It's downright creepy.
You know, I do have to give you a compliment, because I did see the film the other week. And when I went into the theater, my husband and I chose to go in the middle of the week on 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the theater was, everyone that came in had 12 different theaters, movie screens. And we went into this one, and everyone that came in was going in for your film. And at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it was half full. So I'm telling you, you've got a lot of followers out there.
Well, remember the film 2016. I mean, it's become the number four political documentary, number four documentary of all time, and the number two grossing political documentary. So the film has been seen by 3 million people. It's grossed $32 million. So it's actually been a runaway success, and very unusual for a docudrama, for a documentary film, to be so long in the theater and do so well. So it'll be in the theater for another 3 weeks or so, and it's really important that people want to see this film. It's really a different experience to see it in the theater. The film will eventually be in DVD and so on, but this is the kind of film that it's made by the guy who made Schindler's List. It's shot in Hawaii, in Chicago, in Indonesia, in India, in Kenya. So there's a kind of a beautiful landscape and original musical score to the film. It is a film that I would recommend seeing in the theater.
I got a quick question. I don't know if you can answer this, but in your research, this came up a couple times, and I didn't think anything of it. It was rumored that Barack's mother had several Social Security numbers, possibly for the sake that she was getting the old-fashioned welfare checks that came in the mail. Any truth to any of that?
I actually have not heard that, and therefore I don't know if there's any truth to that. I would actually doubt it, because Barack's mother, Ann Obama, lived most of her life in Indonesia. She actually packed up young Obama at the age of 10 and dispatched him alone back from Jakarta to America. And she didn't go with him, nor did she return to America. I mean, she did come later for short periods of time, but she lived essentially the rest of her life in the third world. So it doesn't make sense to me that she would either need or go running around with a bunch of Social Security numbers. She essentially was so multicultural that she gave up, in a way, on American life and did stuff like living among peasant handicraftsmen in rural Indonesia, returning to America only at the end of her life when she had cancer. So she kind of came back home to die.
Okay. What's your take on the birth certificate and that with your research?
Well, I'm not an expert on the authenticity of birth certificates or any of that, but I do think circumstantially it seems very likely that Obama was born in America. Why? Because his birth was noted in the Honolulu Advertiser and one other paper. This is in August of 1961. So unless there's a conspiracy going back 50 years, it's hard for me to see how that could happen if the guy had not been born in America.
Okay. Annie?
Yeah, If Obama is reelected, what can we expect, and who would rise as the world power to replace the USA?
I think that if Obama is reelected, we might see in the next 4 years the winding down of the American era. Remember, the American era began in 1945, when America became, in a sense, a world power. America didn't become the world's sole superpower until 1992, when the Soviet Union collapsed. We've been living in an age where America has been special, and America has had an unusually high standard of living. American culture is spreading throughout the world. I think Obama wants to wind all that down. and finish it off. In some ways, that also represents the end of the American dream, a dream in which our children and grandchildren live better than we do. I think from Obama's point of view, it's a little bit like, why? Why should our children and grandchildren live better? Why should America be number one? Why should we have 5% of the world's population and yet consume 25% of the world's wealth or the world's energy? So Obama's point of view is that if we have 5% of the world's population, use 5% of the world's oil. That's all we have a right to. So what Obama's all about is downsizing America. And by that I mean downsizing the American standard of living and downsizing America's influence in the world. How do I know this? Because he's been doing it. America's wealth has dropped sharply in the last 5 years, and America's power is greatly reduced. We started off Obama's term with 5,000 nuclear weapons. Now with the START Treaty, we're going down to 1,500. Obama has recommended that the Pentagon study going down to 300. So I can see before my very eyes American wealth and power shrinking. And I can see the president pursuing policies that achieve that. And so I simply am not making much of a leap in saying that he actually intends those policies to have the effect that they are actually having. And so if he had 4 more years, you can expect that he would do more of the same, or maybe even more of the same. Why? Because now he would not have to be reelected. He wouldn't care about the Jewish vote or this or that. He'd be untethered from public opinion in a way the real Obama could finally come out.
Wow. Yeah, one of the things that did startle me is that, you know, under Reagan, we built up our military, and he even pulled the biggest bluff off with that Star Wars, making everyone believe it was real. So all this protective power, I would call it, you know, it was not offensive, it was protective to protect us, has been diminished. And I think that's one of the main reasons why we're seeing so much saber rattling going on. Iran, Ahmadinejad today in the UN, you got North Korea being more aggressive. What do we do to reverse this? And, you know, how do we come back to our former presence?
Well, there is no way to reverse it, I don't believe, with Obama in the White House. So that would be obviously step one. But I think step two is that, you know, it goes far beyond, okay, you know, we have Romney and so things are going to be fine. I mean, ultimately, this is a case where we have a complete change in the balance of power that's occurring around the world. We have lots of hungry nations that are coming up in the world. And it's very important for America to compete with them and compete effectively with them. This is going to require a better education system than the one we have. It's going to require a politics that works better. It's going to require tax rates that are competitive and attract capital rather than driving it away. So the bottom line of this is that ultimately this is not just about Obama. It goes beyond Obama. And yet in some ways, the first question is, who is the man who's leading us, right? I mean, if we're the Los Angeles Lakers or the San Diego Chargers and we have a coach who is calling plays for our team to lose, even if he's not doing it because he hates the team or something, he just doesn't think the team should keep winning. Then the first thing you want to do if you want to have a winning team is you've got to fire the coach.
Well, what would you say his inner compass is then?
Well, his inner compass is simply one of being a global redistributionist. And the reason that's an inner compass is because most of the liberals think Obama is a domestic redistributionist, right? If I look, I'm in New York now, if I look out of my office, I see all these bedraggled Occupy Wall Street guys. And all of them think, well, you know, we're the 99%, and in those tall buildings are the 1%, and we're hoping to redistribute income away from them and to us, and so on. But Obama's a global redistributor. And for him, America, the whole country, is the 1%. And there are 99 hungry nations encircling America, all of whom want America's wealth, America's standard of living, American affluence, American cultural power, and so on. So what these Occupy fools don't realize is that ultimately Obama is quite happy that even middle-class Americans and poor Americans would see some diminution in their standard of living so that people in other developing countries can come up. And if you say, well, why would he do that? These are poor people. Obama's answer would be no, they're not poor by world standards. If somebody makes $20,000 a year, you may think they're poor in America. But by the world standard, they're well off.
You also call him a sellout because you say that he's not following what he's preaching.
Well, the point about Obama is that he's, you know, he preaches, not preaches, he actually tries to use the force of the federal government to make people pay up money to help the disadvantaged. This is his core philosophy, the fair share, you know. Now, never once does Obama really debate what fair share means. Half of Americans pay no income taxes. Is that fair? Obama never discusses that point. But what Obama keeps repeating almost mindlessly is the phrase from the Bible, "We are our brother's keeper." And in the film, there's a very revealing interview with Obama's actual brother, George Obama, who's living in the Huruma slum of Nairobi, walking through, you know, sewage to get to the nearest street, living on a few dollars a month. Obama hasn't contributed one penny to help his own actual brother. So what does it say when a man makes it the centerpiece of his political philosophy that the rest of us are our, quote, brother's keeper, and he's done nothing to keep his own brother living, again, not in American-style poverty, but in third-world poverty?
You know, one of the things I liked in the film, I was cracking up, was you trying to bring these three goats to his aunt. You tell us a story on that one.
Well, the thing about it is Obama's grandmother, Sarah Obama, will meet with tourists and people who want to see her. So we requested an interview. And we were told that, yes, you can certainly have an interview with her, but you have to bring her a goat. That is kind of her price of admission, so to speak. So just to be safe, we brought three. And in the film, you know, I mean, my dad was an engineer, so I don't come from an agricultural background. You see me, like, dragging these unwilling goats all pulling in the opposite directions up the streets of Togello. I'm here.
Something cut off.
Yeah, I'll just finish my story and I need to run. But yeah, so I was just saying that that was an amusing scene in the film because, and by the way, it's Obama's grandmother, Granny Sarah, but she's not his real grandmother. She's his step grandmother because his grandfather had five wives and she's one of the other wives.
Well, one last question before we let you go. Is there another book in the works? Because you are a prodigious writer. How many books do you have?
I wrote The Roots of Obama's Rage 2 years ago, but I have a new book that's come out about 4 weeks ago. It just hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list. It's just called Obama's America. And so what I would recommend is people see the film, and the film is sort of appetizer for the book because the book is a handbook in taxes and in energy, in the Middle East, in Israel, in foreign policy. What is America facing? What are the prospects over the next 4 years with an Obama second term? That's what this book is all about.
Yeah, and I have it right in front of me, and I have it little pages marked on everything I was making notes on. I know that you do have to run, Dinesh, and it has been such a pleasure. I would like to invite you to come back again.
I would love to. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much, my friend.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay,
wow.
That was Dinesh D'Souza. He's the president of King's College in New York City. He's got, I think, 7 or 8 books behind him, and his latest is Obama's America, subtitled The Unmaking of the American Dream. Got a copy of it right here on the desk, and the film is fantastic. You know, I suggest everyone take some time and go out and see that movie.
Wow. I mean, some of that stuff is just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, we're going to take a short little 3-minute break, and I'm going to play a song here that was sent to me by a couple of friends known as the Rivoli Review. I want to drive some liberals crazy with this one, so here we go.
Romney and Ryan 2012, Romney and Ryan 2012, they'll serve our country well, they'll bring back our economy, they'll bring back jobs for you and me. Now folks, to my song, and I'll tell you why Mitt Romney's strong.
A Goldwater type of campaign song.
Yeah, certainly does.
They're two of the nicest people. And as you would say, Mike, she's hot. She's hot. That was a fantastic guest. And CR8 posted from, what is this, Frank Pastore's show about the movie and the interviews with Dinesh. If anyone has missed the interview and they're tuning in now, Mr. Dinesh had to leave. He has prior commitments. So he was on the first half hour. So after the show, you'll be able to open up the podcast and listen to that interview. Our call-in line is open. It's 917-889-3675. So please feel free to give a call in and give us your opinion. Now, Mike, you and I, before the show, were talking about what happened last night, and I'm still furious over it. I don't know if anyone out there watched the Green Bay-Seattle Seahawks game. And those who are tuning in know I am an avid Green Bay fan. I have been since the age of 3, despite the fact I am from New York and living in South Carolina. I was screaming at that TV, and if it wasn't for the fact I paid about $2,500 for this TV, I was going to throw something at it.
Well, Jermaine, I'd like Jermaine to call in, actually. Some people were asking me. He's finally back, and he could explain. Somebody messaged me and said they heard Jermaine had gone into critical condition and is like on life support or something, and I'm like, he's in the chat room. But anyway, but you know, Annie, I said to you off the air, and I say the same thing, this is great. Because we're always having this discussion on BTR. It's your typical GOP, the hell with it. People aren't worth minimum wage. They should be making a quarter an hour, and that's overpaid, like the Chinese, etc. The bottom line is when you have and you invest in a company, when you invest and you want to make money, you're not going to make anything by not spending it. If you're going to have good officiating in the NFL, which each team is worth at least $1 billion, each NFL team, including et cetera, I think the Dallas Cowboys are well past that, but the bottom line is you need to pay officials. And
yeah,
if you're going to have a company like that, I mean, to play in the NFL, coaches coach year-round. It's no different than with officiating. This is, again, the front office, Roger Goodell, one more time, basically thinking, you know, he should go to China or Indonesia or maybe Malaysia. He can get good officiating there for $1 a game.
Well, I don't know anything about their contract, so I can't honestly, I cannot debate you on the contract of what they deserve or if they're asking too much for anything. But I can, and I will, say Jennings had that ball. He had the complete intercept. He had it in his hands. He pulled it into himself. His feet hit the ground. That was an interception. I don't care what anyone else says. And those stupid, idiotic NFL officials that you love so much, they reviewed the play, and this just popped up on the news, that the refs agreed that the call was wrong, but the call still stands. They won't even reverse it when they admit the call was wrong.
Well, the statement from the NFL was released just prior to going on the air. Either way, the bottom line is you've got to get the other officials back. whatever it is, you got to solve the problem here. This has been, since the start of the season, these officials are very bad. They're amateurs. They in no way can keep up. And as you can see, there were going to be two different calls right at the play. One was one was signaling incomplete pass, game over, or touchback. Interception, touchback, game over. This is just going to go on and on. And I don't know if Sunday night people are aware that New England's coach went after an official and actually grabbed him.
Oh, Belichick, yes. And he got ejected.
And once again, I mean, this stems from the philosophy that do we really want good workers? You know, and I know you'll argue the fact, but a $13 an hour welder is not as good as a $23, $24 union worker. It's that simple. It's not even debatable. And if the blind want to continue to believe the blind and be morons and think, we can keep these officials. Roger Goodell's statement is that he's very impressed how quickly the decisions are being made and how much more efficient from game one.
How efficient? What about when Rodgers threw the pass and the receiver is out there, he's being interfered with? I mean, you couldn't even miss the fact that there was massive pass interference on all the receivers. There was humongous helmet. I mean, he grabbed the face mask, and you can see the receiver's head snap to the side as he's in the air and coming down. And I'm screaming, "You got not only pass interference, you've got a face mask!"
Well, how about the fact that the Green Bay guy, the Green Bay receiver, 15, 20 yards downfield, got grabbed, and then a fight ensued? They didn't even flag him. And this is happening all the time. The Detroit Lions got 8 yards on a mark. They got eight. They lost 8 yards, which I don't like the Lions and I don't like the Packers. Obviously, I'm a Bear fan. But this is bad for the NFL. It's just a matter of time before it gets to your team. It's kind of the old statement, you give away a little of your constitutional rights, you don't mind because it really affects more the people you don't like. That's the same thing. Got to get this strike solved. That's not going to solve all the problems because officiating sucks, period. But the bottom line is these officials who have officiated in the game, and one of the reasons why the officiating is so bad is because Division I college officials refuse to break the picket. They do the Big Ten and the Southeast conferences and the ACC conferences, they refused to do that. So what they had to do is they went and got Division III, and then they just got basically amateurs. And this is just got to get solved. If we are worried about the integrity as well as the safety of the players, this has to get solved because that call was the last of many blunders throughout the night. I mean, that was just a poorly officiated game. And for the NFL Network to actually take a stance almost like Joseph Goebbels would do, I mean, it's almost as if Roger Goodell is saying that, in general, people who watch the NFL Network are so stupid that they would believe his bullshit. And it's ridiculous. They botched it. They botched many of the calls. And basically, if you really think about it, Annie, these players are seeing what they can get away with these officials. you know, and they're getting away with an awful lot, and now it's taken away from the integrity of the game. The best part about what happened yesterday, the Green Bay Packers, which is a very rich, tradition-rich team, has a lot of influence in the NFL, and so do the New England Patriots. They are two of the teams that have been affected by this. Their influence on Roger Goodell is going to be greater than if, say, a Cincinnati team were to complain. When you have the Packers and the Patriots, teams that have won an awful lot of championships in the past few decades, especially since the inception of the NFL, Green Bay more throughout the NFL, where New England the last, say, 15 years, but they'll have a much greater influence in getting this solved. And the bottom line, it's over. The referees want to be paid full-time throughout the year and make it a full-time job because they are doing things in the off-season, and they're being reimbursed for it. But anyway, either way, we just got to get it solved. And it's just taking away from me.
Even if they were to sign a contract, and even if a contract was approved, all right, it has to go and then get ratified. And once it goes and gets ratified and everyone says, all right, fine, we're going back to work, they have a switch in the sponsor on the ref uniforms, which means they all have to be refitted for the new uniforms. So you're talking, and plus they have to go back for at least a week's training to make sure they're up on all the rules and so forth. So you're talking about weeks before these refs come back. We got a call coming in on the line, and this is a South Carolina call. Area code 843, you're on the air live. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, this is X-Hyphenated. It's been a while.
Where have you been? And where are you in South Carolina?
I'm in Darlington, South Carolina.
Oh, Darlington Raceway, yes.
That's right, that's right.
Matter of fact, I was at the race where Ricky Crash Craven and Kurt Busch
went, you can't call him in turn two
in the, what do you call those things, the suite.
Okay.
I was sitting right there in the suite.
You can't call him Crash anymore.
I know.
You can't call him Crash. You hurt his feelings when you call him that. I don't know what exactly we're talking about. I got in, but Blog Talk is doing something weird to me. When I can get in, I'll get in, but when I can't, I have to sit there as a guest, and I can hear the broadcast half the time, and the other half I can't, so I have to see what's in the chat room.
Are you using Skype?
No. Just regular old call-up line.
That's what I use.
Yeah, I posted something in the chat room there, and I don't know if this is something you guys want to talk about, but it was very disturbing when I watched it this morning, and that was the comment that Hillary Clinton made at the Clinton Global Symposium or the global thing that they have every year. And that her comment was that, you know, she said that rich people everywhere, that they don't contribute to the growth of their own countries, they need to pay more taxes.
Oh, I'm looking at the article that you wrote, and that is really funny. The quote is, there are rich people everywhere, and yet they do not contribute to the growth of their own countries. What planet is she living on?
I'm trying to grasp this, and when I actually saw the video of her saying this, and it was early this morning I saw it, and I'm trying to get dressed to go to work, and it's like, oh, no, hell, she didn't. And she actually said it with a straight face and was serious about it. And I'm like, let me get this straight. So you just took this from an American thing, and she made it very clear that she doesn't get political. You took this from an American thing to a global thing.
Absolutely.
In less than 5 seconds. And I know those folks out there that's been saying this and, you know, have been labeled as conspiracy theorists. But they may have been some of the most prophetic people in America, because she let her globalist ideology shine clearly to anyone that was in the audience and to anyone that saw the video. And I don't see how President Obama can get away with this one when his own Secretary of State is advocating for higher taxes for the world's rich people.
And this is on her quote. She wrote, she says, they don't invest in public schools, in public hospitals, and other kind of development internally. And so it means for leaders telling powerful people things they don't want to hear means being transparent about budgets and revenues and bringing corruption to light. And when that happens, we shouldn't punish countries for uncovering corruption. We should reward them for doing so. And it means putting in place regulations designed to attract and protect investment. None of the sentences really.
So,
how many hospitals have been built and wings named after corporate and rich donors? How many colleges have scholarships and dorms or whatever built and named after them because of their donations? I was pissed off about the refs before. I'm getting even madder now.
I saw this, and I was just absolutely livid. The audacity of these people, the audacity of hope, they must be the audacity of dope, because that's what they're smoking. I mean, this is crazy. And they jump on, and the double standard, they jump on Mitt Romney because Mitt Romney paid 14%, 14.8 or something percent on a capital gains from his investments. And they're saying, see, we told you, we proved it to you. He did not pay the right amount of taxes. Well, anybody that pays on capital gains is going to pay that amount, whether they're paying on $200 million or $50,000. It doesn't make any difference. It's the same rate. But the problem that they've got is, you know, that they, what they didn't comment on was the 35% he paid on the front end when he made the money.
I was just going to say that.
It's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. And I am getting so tired that these folks in the news media is playing people. They're basically pimping. I mean, it's like they got people, you know, hypnotized. This is what you got to do. This is what you got to do. Don't listen to anyone else. They're lying to you. You know? I mean, it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, but think of it this. They seem to feel that if they say it, it would be deemed to be the truth. But if a conservative were to say something, nope, we're lying, we're racist, we just don't understand how the system works, blah, 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 blah. And it's like to have a debate with Keith Doberman, I mean Olbermann, and Bill Maher.
They call you a racist, they call me an Uncle Tom. Instead
of debating you, because they can't debate you and have a competitive discussion. So by calling, you an Uncle Tom, or it automatically has branded you something. I mean, it changes the topic. So that's
I'm a sellout.
Exactly.
Let me get this straight. I want y'all to think about this, the logic of it. I'm a sellout, but you're getting food stamps. You're getting a free cell phone. You're getting your rent paid. You're getting free medical care. And all I want to do is go out there and work and get whatever I can for my work, bring it home, pay my bills, feed my family, put my kids through college, and I'm the sellout? You better kiss where the sun don't shine.
Oh, man, you have that completely correct. But what I love is they use the term Uncle Tom, which means not one of them has read the book, because Uncle Tom was the hero. And he's the one who laid down his life to save and help free two other slaves. So
I was going to comment regarding what you just said is, and another thing too is that in many ways the Clintons, which we started out talking about Hillary, they were so good at conniving all the racial rhetoric, making it look as if how they're interceding. Annie is on one side, and you're on the other side. Here's the Clintons that will intercede and help make.
What's the sound
work.
Here?
No, I can hear
hello?
Everything, Annie.
Okay.
Annie, I can hear you, Annie.
I seem to have lost sound here.
Well, I can hear you, Annie.
Yeah, I can hear you.
If anyone can.
Yeah, Annie, we both can hear you. So, well, Annie will call back in. But anyway, what I was going to say, and the Clintons, look, here's Hillary to help save the day. Here's Bill Clinton to help save the day. But the bottom line is they're the ones who instigated this debate in the first place. Yeah, Annie's back.
Okay.
So go ahead. I was just commenting regarding what you were saying.
But I mean, I'm right here in the heart of the 7th district in South Carolina, the newly created district that we have, and there is a. A lady that moved here from Georgia to run in the 7th district. And her thing is, she's proudly displays it. I am a Obama supporter. I support Obama 100%. I stand by my president. And I'm like, okay. But here's the thing. We'll see it start in the next 10 days. I don't think the blitz is going to occur until 30 days out from the election. But I hope that somebody that gets accused of being a racist, I hope they sue the pants off of whoever accuses them of being a racist. Because that is a defamation suit, guys. I do not understand why white folks sit back and let black folks call them racist and not do a flipping thing about it. It boggles
the mind. In many cases, they're just you know, political correctness. People are worried about that. I don't know why, because we don't see it in the corporate world. But I mean, in so many ways, I agree. I think people, you know, it's almost like yesterday I wasn't eavesdropping because this lady was talking so loud. But she was yelling at her husband or her boyfriend. And she's like, for God's sakes, are you the man of this relationship or am I? And I thought that's exactly what these kind of people want. They want a man who isn't a man. They want him to be a pussy, a sissy. You know, and that's exactly it. It used to be, even from a Christian standpoint of religion, the man was the man of the house. He loved his wife and family. He worked hard for the family. He would go above and beyond for his family. That was he was so proud of his family. You know, even when he was married 50 years, he was showing off his wife as if she was the newlywed teenage bride. But I mean, it's almost like we come across the Clintons and even G.W. Bush to a standpoint, and Obama, they want men to wear dresses. I mean, it's...
Wow, dude. You know what? Now, what's your name?
Mike.
Mike. Mike, have you been reading some of my writings, man?
No, I have not.
because listen, man, we could be brothers, because I have been talking about the wussification of American males for a long time, and particularly if you want to see what America looks like when it's controlled by no offense, ladies, when it is controlled by the female or the feminist mentality or the womanist mentality, and there is a difference, okay? Womanists and feminists are different mentality than being the regular woman. All you got to do is look at the black community. I guarantee it. That's all you got to do.
I couldn't disagree with you anymore. But I mean, this stems back from basic liberalism. It is. Michael Savage said it the best when he said it's a mental disorder, and it certainly is. The bottom line is, he also said the enemy is within, and that's certainly very, very true as well. The enemy is right here in the United States. We're looking overseas and all shaking in our pants. We need to worry about what's taking place right here in the U.S. within our own states. And I am really unsure how it is that so many Americans for so many years can just be so stupid, not naive, not misled. They're stupid. Because throughout history, we've seen this kind of propaganda. And here it is. It's happening right now as we speak. Even the evidence is right in front of us. But you know what? They don't believe us. And I do believe we finally have Annie back. Skype came in.
Yeah. No, Skype went wacko on me. And all I got was this continuous beeping in my ear every time I tried to call back in. I ended up going to Gmail and calling back in. That was really weird. I hate
what,
Skype.
Annie, this is going to sound stupid, but why didn't you just pick up the damn telephone and dial? you're like GGT in a chat.
Because I can't use my mic or my mixer board or my headset. It's not hooked up through the phone. Hooked up through the computer.
So yeah, you didn't hear that comment that I made. I made a comment.
Go ahead and repeat it so Annie can.
I told her. I said that if America wants to see what a America looks like when it's being led by the feminist mentality or the womanist mentality, all you got to do is look at the African American community, and you'll see. It's a mentality that says, I feel like you're discriminating against me, so therefore you are. It's based on feelings, you know, that's not going to work.
Well, unfortunately, what 300 years of slavery did not do, which the purpose was to destroy the black population, that liberals have been doing now in just 30 years with their social programs. They're succeeded.
I mean, if you look at every other ethnic group outside of American Indian, and you will see that every other ethnic group is growing by a ratio of at least 2-1. However, if you look at the African American rate, the birth rate versus this death rate, it's in the negative. For every person, for every African American that dies, 0.7 is being born. That is alarming.
And it's scary, too, because what it does is not just when this started many, many decades ago, what it does now, it almost in many, many ways makes its political influence insignificant. To whereas before, the black, quote-unquote, black vote was pretty important, and as time goes on, it's almost going to become completely irrelevant because it's going to be so small population-wise compared to the other ones. The fastest growing is the Asians. So those who that's surprising. We would all think it's the Latinos, but it's not. So I guess for those who think the Asians do nothing but work, they're kind of wrong. They do other things. But I mean, there's a perfect example. There is a perfect example of say 15 years from now, if we can get America back on track, which I hope we can, and I think these primaries are a good indication that we've had enough of a lot of the BS. But say it's 2030. Who are you going to cater to more, the Latinos and the Asians or the African-American? The African-American may become to a point because, you know, the group that really were are growing families, et cetera, that's not happening. So it may become that group where, okay, you know what, you can have that kind of group. It's almost insignificant. And that'd be a horrible thing because throughout history, blacks have been great in just everything to do with building America. You know, it was a shame with slavery, but how many military leaders do we have, very good ones, that are leading, that are training our soldiers, that are just on and on and on, that have their own businesses, the entrepreneurship? And it's horrible. And what do you see next in the black communities? Planned Parenthood.
Well, if you think about it, you've got Planned Parenthood. They preach abortion. You've got Planned Parenthood. They preach, you know, abortion and birth control or whatever you call it. But then you've got the African American church that has bought into the idea of supporting gay and lesbian marriage. So you've got abortion, you've got gay and lesbian marriage. So what that does is that on the one hand you destroy your family by not having a family. On the other hand, you destroy your family by destroying the moral structure of that family. So what do African Americans do? Nothing. There's nothing they can do because it's genocide.
No, it's genocide. Funny you bring up the gay marriage. There's something that popped up in the news today. France is set to ban the words mother and father, official documents, as under plans to legalize gay marriage. So can you imagine you have now – I'm trying to figure out what they would call the mother and what term they would use, and I think I came up with it. It would be female birth parent. And what would the male be? He'd be – can anyone get any more ridiculous to ban the words mother and father? And what better way to break down a family structure than to deny the fact that these words exist?
There's also another aspect to that, too. If you ban mother and father, then you can ban God as well.
Go look
because
into the,
cannot,
into the
because
chat
you
room.
Can't call him the Heavenly Father.
Well, you can't even do that now. That's wrong. You look into the chat room. CRA folks, what do you see in the black community? Liquor stores, churches, and beauty supply stores.
You guys ever heard of something called ten or the 12 things the Negro must do for himself? It's written back in 1904 by a lady by the name of Nanny Burroughs.
No, I've never heard of it.
You gotta see this thing. I'm gonna pull it up and put it in the room. But she lays out exactly what the African American community needs to do for itself. There's 12 things that they got to do, and that will help the African American to achieve. But there's some skepticism about it because a lot of folks don't want to accept it. But it's so true, and I've pulled it up here. I'm going to put it in the chat room as well. Got to get it right there. There we go. And post it. There we go. Now, anybody wants to read along with it, but number one, a Negro must learn to put first things first. The first things are education, development of character traits, and trade and home ownership. okay? Now, listen to me, guys. The Negro puts too much of his earnings in the clothes and food and in show and having and in having what he calls a good time. Dr. Kelly Miller says, now, this is in 1904, the Negro buys what he wants and begs for what he needs. 1904. Number two, the Negro must stop expecting God and white folks to do for him what he can do for himself. Sounds interesting. Number three, the Negro must keep himself, his children, his home clean and his surroundings in which he lives comfortable and attractive. Number four, the Negro must learn to dress more appropriately for work and for leisure. No explanation there. The Negro must make his religion an everyday practice and not just a Sunday go-to-meeting emotional affair. Wow. The Negro must highly resolve to wipe out mass ignorance. Okay, the leaders of the race must teach and inspire the masses to become eager and determined to improve mentally, morally, and spiritually, and to meet the basic requirements of citizenship. We should initiate an intensive literacy program in America, as well as in Africa. Ignorance satisfies ignorance, a millstone about the neck of the race. It is democracy's greatest burden. Social integration is a relationship attained as a result of cultivation of kindred social ideals, interests, and standards. It is a blending process that requires time, understanding, and kindred purpose to achieve. Likes alone, not laws, can do it. The Negro must stop charging his failures up to his color and white people's attitudes. The truth of the matter is that good service and conduct will make senseless racial prejudice fade like mist before the rising sun. God never intended for man's color, that a man's color shall be anything but a badge of distinction. It is high time that all races were learning that fact. The Negro must first qualify whatever the position he wants. Purpose, initiative, ingenuity, and industry are the keys for all men to use to get what they want. The Negro will have to do the same. He must make himself a workman who is too skilled not to be wanted and too dependable not to be on the job, according to promise or plan. He will never become a vital factor in industry until he learns how to put his work, the vitalizing force of initiative, skill, and dependability. He has gone rights mad and duty dumb.
Wow.
The Negro must overcome his bad job habits. Okay? Leave that one alone. He must improve his conduct in public places. Rubbernecking and all the rest of that stuff. The Negro must learn how to operate business for people, not just for Negro people only. To do business, he will have to remove the typical earmarks, business principles, measure up to accepted standards, and meet stimulating competition graciously. In fact, he must welcome competition. Number 11, the average so-called educated Negro will have to come down out of the air. He is too inflated over nothing. He needs an experience similar to the one that Ezekiel had and must do what Ezekiel did. Otherwise, through indifference as the plight of the masses, the Negro who thinks he has escaped will lose his own soul. I need to explain that to anybody? Okay. The Negro must stop forgetting his friends and remember. The Negro has had and still has friends in the North and in the South. These friends not only pray, speak, write, influence others, but make an unbelievable, unpublished sacrifice and contributions for the advancement of the race, for their brothers in bonds. The noblest thing the Negro can do is to live is to so live and labor that these benefactors will be given, will not have given in vain. The Negro must take his heart warm with gratitude, his lips sweet with thanks, and his heart and mind resolute with a purpose to justify the sacrifices made at his feet and go forward. God is no respecter of persons. In every nation, he that feareth him and worketh his righteousness is sure to win out. Get to work. That the answer to everything, excuse me, that's the answer to everything that hurts us. We talk too much about nothing instead of redeeming the time by working. In spite of racial prejudice, America brims full of opportunity. Go after them. Now, this thing was written, like I said, around 1904, okay? And the scary thing and the most disturbing thing about this, it could have been written yesterday.
I was scrolling down.
I was scrolling down. It's there. And this is the sad thing. But it's y'all fault. It's white folks' fault that we're in the situation we're in. It's because of 400 years of slavery. 400 years. And y'all not helping us by, you need to give us more money. More money. To keep us from suffering.
No, it's funny because someone put up on Twitter the other day, she happened to be a female black, said that if Romney were to get into office and take away her food stamp, she's coming after him. She will assassinate him. Now, that's scary.
Well,
that
here's
is scary.
I'm going to say this, and there's a reason. And we're here in South Carolina, right now we've got the whole voter thing, the voter ID bill, that's going before the three judges today, I believe. But I believe that if Barack Obama does not win this election, they're going to blame it on voter suppression. I believe that there will be riots in the streets, and he will impose martial law. The martial law will remain in effect until the riots in the streets subside, which I do not believe they will subside until after February, March, April, May of next year. And guess who will still try to claim that they're president? The office?
Mm.
Just a thought.
Yeah. That's a very scary thought. I hope you're wrong, but that's a very scary thought.
I hope I'm wrong too, but I don't put it past it. I do not put it past it.
Yeah, matter of fact, Congress had passed a bill, the House did at least, just prior to their going on vacation to campaign, trying to undo the damage Obama did to the welfare program, letting the states determine whether or not work is required to come off of welfare. So
well, it's
going to be interesting to see what happens.
Well, it's not.
Be very,
they can't do that. They don't have the authority to do that. Health and Human Services doesn't. I thought they didn't.
Obama had an executive order that altered the wording of the program, which then allowed states to drop the work requirement, that if you're on welfare or if you're on unemployment, that you must be actively looking and prove that you're looking for a job. And Congress was trying to undo the damage that Obama did, saying, hey, listen, no, the states are running these programs. Allow them to have that wording so that they can say, hey, listen, you're not going to stay on welfare forever because we're going to make sure that you're out there looking for a job. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to be a fight because I don't think, you know, there's some members in Congress that are bold, but I don't think there's any of them up there, particularly in this time of the year, that have the, let's say, the cojones to do it, to go up against them. I think they should have stayed and made sure everything that they had on the books that needed to be cleared up before the election, had it been, you know, have it done. That's it just kind of shows me where their priorities are.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anyone listening in, we had our guest Dinesh D'Souza on the first half hour of the show, and the podcast will be available in approximately 20-25 minutes, and you can then download and listen to it. It was a fantastic interview. Meantime, we're going to normally we do our dedication at the front of the show. We're going to be doing it towards the end. I'm waiting for my co-host to come back. He had to take a step away. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. Our call-in line is open. It's 917-889-3675. Now, hyphenated, how do you like it up there in the upcountry area of South Carolina?
I actually love it. I mean, you know, it's a nice area. You know, the people are nice, regardless of what anyone says. And you know, there's this stigma that the further, the deeper you get into South Carolina, the more racist it is. I'm going to tell you, I've seen more racism from black people that look like me than I've ever seen from white folks. I've been discriminated more from black people because I am a dark-skinned African-American male. You know, if you really want to see what a successful individual is in black America, all you have to do is pick up a magazine, Jet Magazine, Essence Magazine, Black Enterprise, any of those magazines, and look at the complexion of those individuals in there. And you'll see the editors of those magazines think the face of success is in the African-American community. As a matter of fact, there's only a handful of dark-skinned actors out there, you know. And we have 7, 8, 10 different color shades, you know. Passing, high yellow, light skin, you know, pecan, tan, caramel, twist, dark skin, black, blue, black, and purple, you know. It all depends. Yeah, I mean, you think I'm joking? I'm telling you the truth.
Man, you know, I there's something growing up because I grew up through the era of the busing and everything, and I think some listeners out there that are approximately my age can remember it too. But I found it that when the Jet magazine came out and I was seeing it on the stands, it always amazed me that they preferred to have more of a white look to them, you know, with the hair, the complexion. And I said, well, you know, I know a lot of people that are black that's successful. My mother and I at one point had a travel agency together, and this was in the late 70s. And one of our favorite customers was a college professor. And he was as dark as you can come. And I says, well, why don't they have his face on the cover? You know, he's intelligent. His speech and mannerisms is gracious. And he was an absolute joy to just sit down and talk to. Someone like that would have so much more to give back to the community. Why don't they use those type of faces? And it always amazed me they used these celebrities that had all these wacko ideas. No, why don't you just get some real people there? Cool,
yeah.
Mike, well, he's back now. And we got about 15 minutes to go, Mike. Would you like to do the dedication now?
Yeah, we'll do the dedication. Sorry about that. I had, as always, business, and business. But I am back, and I am ready to do the dedication. Also, tonight, Annie, I just want to remind everyone, we will be back with Conservative Primetime. Jermaine, what happened with Jermaine is he came back too soon. He didn't listen to the doctors that said take a month off. He decided to take 3 days off instead. And so now he is fully recuperated. And tonight's dedication is about a individual pilot after almost 70 years on September 11th, they've identified him after almost 70 years. So that will be our dedication tonight for Conservative Primetime.
No, that's Conservative Primetime. Okay. I thought you were talking about us.
Nope.
Dr. Jones is also in the house. He's got his own show that's going to be on, I believe, tonight, Doc, about 8 o'clock, the Situation Report. It's always fun to listen to. But I always end up getting myself involved.
Should be called, That show should be called the Bashing Obama Report. Doc doesn't even say good evening, everybody, and welcome. Right off the bat, he's like, that creep Obama, you know what he does? It's like, go, Doc. Anyway, yes, I am. Which music? Oh, I love you, Doc Jones. What music are we playing?
You can pull up the Army Mix with Taps.
Okay. I'm ready when you are, Miss Annie.
Okay. This show, and Hyphen, you can hang on, and if we have enough time, we'll finish up the conversation after this. This is dedicated to Master Sergeant Coder Dubois, and this is from the Clarion Ledger in Biloxi. Master Sergeant Coder Dubois was buried with full military honors in Biloxi National Cemetery. He was 55. The Mississippi Army Reserve soldier died August 19th in Spin Boldek, Afghanistan, of injuries suffered from small arms fire while conducting security force assistance operations. The incident remains under investigation. He was killed by blue on green fire. Dubois was a native of State Line and had lived for decades in coastal Jackson County. He was a communications specialist assigned to the 351st Infantry Regiment, the 158th Infantry Brigade, 1st Army Division East. He was deployed in April to train Afghan police in and around Kandahar. Dubois joined the Alabama National Guard in May 1983 and transferred to the Army Reserves in 2008. He was deployed to Iraq in 2004. The Sun-Herald reports that Colonel Christopher Forbes, commander of Dubois' unit, said Tuesday that Dubois served 327 this year in scored 327 this year in physical fitness test. That's 27 points above the maximum score and was a better showing than any and many of the younger soldiers. He was well-loved, Forbes said. He was a super soldier. He was a father who loved his family and was probably one of the hardest working, most dedicated soldiers we had. Dubois is survived by his wife, Juanita, three sons, LaTravis Dubois of Moss Point, Christopher Dubois of Paris Island, South Carolina, and Broderick Dubois of Petal, and two daughters, Karanika Jackson of Hattiesburg and Akeisha Raybon of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Dayton, Ohio. Dubois was promoted to Master Sergeant after his death. As relatives sat beside his casket, they were presented with five American flags, along with his Purple Heart, Bronze Star, and other honors. Dubois' brother Jesse Dubois, also of State Line, said after the funeral that he was proud of his brother's legacy. We are all suffering a great loss and a great tragedy because we loved our brother. He stood tall among all of us and let us know his military strength and how proud he was of his country, the U.S. Army, and also proud of his family. He was a man a lot of people looked up to. We should all leave a legacy like that. Other family members didn't wish to be interviewed, but they released a statement thanking people for their support. There are no words to describe how saddened we are by the loss of this great husband, father, soldier, and friend, the statement said. Coder took his job in the Army very seriously and was very proud of his more than 27 years of service. When he was selected to be part of the Security Forces assistant team, he knew this was just one more chance to make a difference. We are all taking comfort in knowing that Coder died what he loved, being a soldier. We are incredibly proud of what Coder has achieved in his 55 years. Coder was an accomplished soldier, but his proudest achievement was his family, who will miss him the most. He was buried in military service at Camp Shelby Joint Forces Training Center near Hattiesburg. Master Sergeant Coder D. Dubois. May he rest in peace. And for that,
wow. We
will now dedicate the song My Name is America by Todd Allen Herndon. You can find this up on YouTube, and you can download it from Todd Allen Herndon's website.
More Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. My strength was not taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is
My Name is America by Todd Allen Herendon, and we're back. Anyone that was listening in earlier, hoping to listen to Dinesh D'Souza, he was on the first half hour. In approximately 5-10 minutes, the podcast will be available that you can come back and listen to that. Mike, we have on Friday Colonel Martha McSally. She will be with us this Friday. Unfortunately,
so
last Friday.
On that.
Positive on that. So anyone that was trying last Friday to tune in for Martha McSally. She had to catch a plane last minute. Her schedule just got topsy-turvy, but I have been promised she will be here Friday. So you can check up on this Friday with Martha McSally. She was the first female to fly combat in Iraq, and also she commanded, the first female to command a flying unit. So that's going to be exciting. And then
now
next week we got
for Gabby Giffords. Position, right?
Right. Arizona District 2. She's running for Gabby Gifford's seat in Arizona. She's running against Barbara, who was Gabby Gifford's assistant. There was a special election and he got the seat. So she's now running in the general election to permanently take that seat back and make it a solid Republican seat. So we're going to have a lot of good stuff coming on up. You know, I got to tell you a secret, though, Mike. When we were interviewing Dinesh, I don't know if you heard some noise going on in the background off of my mic, but we've got this kitten. She's going on now about 4 or 5 months old, and she decided to get up on the chair behind me and start to chase her tail. So it was a little difficult with her claws going into my prodigious posterior.
you should put in the front of your house, like, for stray animals with an arrow to your front door. It's the way you take care of animals. I brought up let me do this for a minute. I brought up a Martha McSally clip. This is pretty good. This will get everybody excited about listening in on Friday.
We have got to get our debt under control. We have got to stop the intrusion that's coming from the East and the federal government. And we have got to address the very serious national security issues on our border that are affecting this region.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about this. Something in the news over the last couple of weeks, they're talking about easing the restrictions on putting women in combat up closer to the front line, although, you know, they've been there, obviously. You're a great point. I want you to listen to what Rick Santorum has said regarding this recently. Here he is.
But I think that could be a very compromising situation where people naturally may do things that may not be in the interest of the mission because of other types of emotions that are involved, and I think that's probably not in the best interest of men, women, or the mission.
Sounds critical of it. What's your comment about what the senator said?
You know, I agree with many of the things that Rick Santorum says. But when I heard this, I really just wanted to go kick him in the jimmy.
Kick him in the jimmy.
Yeah, he's totally out of touch. I mean, completely out of touch. These are the types of arguments we heard 20, 25 years ago as to why women couldn't be fighter pilots. And it's an insult to the men and women who are serving overseas, putting their lives on the line, and focusing on the mission right now.
As a Republican, if he's the nominee, then what? How do you feel about supporting him?
Well, I look forward to talking to him. He's going to be here next week, and so maybe we can discuss this a little bit further and bring him up to speed.
I don't think I would mention the Jimmy part to him.
Anyway, that was her on Fox and Morning Friends, and she's got some great commercials if you go to YouTube. I'm really excited about having her because I have been trying to get her on for, Andy, I don't know how long. I just finally out of nowhere got a comment, got a reply from the guy who you're dealing with. So I'm glad you were able to get some competency there. So great. We're looking forward to having her on Friday. And also I'm hoping to get either a week from Friday or 2 weeks from Friday, Dale Peterson, everyone, the greatest Southern American you could ever ask for.
Okay. All right. I want to thank ex-hyphenated American for calling in. And I wish everyone, God bless.
Yes.
I want to wish everyone a God bless too.
Yeah, also, if you want to, tonight at 11:30, if you're still up Eastern Standard Time, we're doing a show called Conservative Primetime. So you're more than welcome. I think I put the link in there, but all you got to do is GGT183. He's also in the chat room. It's a great show, and sometimes someone like me has to school both of these boys on the way it really is. But, you know, it's a great show.
All
right. Yeah, and Dana also has a show coming up right after Doc's show. It's the Conservative Watchtower Primetime Edition. So you can check Dana out. He's got a great show.
Dana's
so everyone have a great
his show
week.
Is sweet. His show's very, very
yeah.
good.
Well, everyone have a great week. We'll see you again here on Friday, same bat time, same bat station. So until then, be safe, and may God bless each and every one of you. Good night.
Peace out.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense, the proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.